Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello and welcome to this special Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. I say special because sitting right here, live in the studio beside me, is the Reverend Judith Huggett, a hospital chaplain. So welcome, Judith. It's an honour to have you with us. I know you're a busy woman. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Alec. It's lovely to be here.
When I say you're a hospital chaplain, you're more than that. You're the lead chaplain and a team of chaplains at Crosshouse Hospital.
Yes.
But you also do more than Crosshouse Hospital. Can you tell us what hospitals you cover and how your team works?
Well, I'm based at Crosshouse Hospital, and I cover more or less half of that hospital and the maternity unit, which is also now up at Crosshouse, and East Ayrshire Community Hospital, which is in Cumnock. Those are my main areas of responsibility. But out of hours, because the chaplaincy service as a whole team offers a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week service, when you're on call, you will cover all the hospitals in Ayrshire, and we would respond and go if someone needed us.
So there's a team of full-time and part-time chaplains?
Yes, yes. There are 4 full-time chaplains, 2 based at Crosshouse, 1 based at Ayr, and 1 based at Ailsa. And then we have part-timers over in Arran and Millport and so on.
And I understand the chaplains that are full-time are all Church of Scotland.
Yes, that's just the way it happens to have worked out.
They don't have to be.
No, they can be of any denomination at all.
Yeah. And most of the part-time chaplains, they're Roman Catholic.
We have other part-time chaplains, yes, who are Roman Catholic. And there is a Roman Catholic chaplain at present attached to most of the hospitals.
And while we're talking all the Christians here, you mm-hmm. do minister to non-Christians.
Yes, we do. Our remit is to be there for anyone of any faith or none while they are in hospital, or whether they're a member of staff or a visitor or carer. If they are of another faith and they want someone from their own faith, we will try and help find someone for them, because it's not always easy. If you're far away from home, for instance, if you're a Coptic Christian, the nearest Coptic community is actually through in Fife.
So how do you get on with the non-Christians? Do you just sort of walk up to them, or do you wait till you're invited? Or how do you get in touch with any patients?
On admission, patients should be asked if they want to see the chaplain, and that generates a list from which we can work and go and see people. Or people come into the chapel and leave a request in. We have a prayer box, and you can either leave a request for a prayer or a request for a visit. Or people simply come and chap the door, which is quite interesting. And that's the way we meet many people. And then, of course, when you're just doing a general ward round, you're just seeing how people are. We don't ask people if they're card carrying this, that or the others. We just see them as another human being who is in hospital. And it can often be a very difficult journey through hospital. And it's often nice to have someone to talk to.
So do you sometimes just drop by people without them having asked?
Yes.
Yeah. Once arrived at a man's bedside simultaneously with the priest. And he saw the priest coming from one side and the Church of Scotland minister coming from the other side. And his face was a picture. And he said, "I'm not that bad, really." But you find that you are welcome when you drop by.
Yes, it can be very lonely in hospital. There are great periods of the day where nothing's happening and you're simply lying in your bed. Yeah. And you have time to think, and sometimes it's nice to discuss those thoughts with someone else.
And you've a 24-hour service, you're saying?
Yes.
So you're a bit stretched at maybe at night times.
You can be. You always hope that if you get called to air, you don't then get called at the same time to Cross House or up to Cumnock.
I'm just thinking, Cross House, how big is it as a hospital?
At Cross House, including the maternity unit, there's about 640 or so beds.
And you were telling me there's something like 5,000 employees associated with Cross House Hospital.
Yes, and the surrounding area of Cross House, because a lot of people are part-timers, of course.
Yeah.
We have a huge staff in terms... It's not just nurses and doctors. That's the people that you tend to think of first in the hospital, but we have all the cleaners who do a marvellous job. We have all the porters who take you where you need to go. You have all the estate staff who look after the buildings and the equipment. You have all the administration staff and the secretaries. It's a huge, vast team of many, many different people who have many different talents and skills. And they all work together. And some are seen and some are unseen. And that often makes it more interesting.
You've got them in Cross House. You've got the other hospitals. So all these patients, all these employees. There is quite a big job in there.
Yes.
So
yes.
We'll hear more about your job in a minute. But you've brought along some music.
I have.
So give us your first favourite piece then.
Well, I chose Bridge Over Troubled Water. I like Simon and Garfunkel, but also I like the idea of helping to be a bridge. I think that's what chaplains often are. We are a bridge for people. When times are troubled and we give them a link into discussing what's happening to them, into sometimes people like to reflect with us how they're going to tell their family, or the family reflect with us how they're going to tell their mum or their dad or their gran. It can be a bridge between them and the medical staff, because sometimes we don't understand each other terribly well. And I think sometimes when we work in hospital, we get very used to speaking in our language. And we forget sometimes that people who come in don't always have quite the same language. And it's good sometimes to be a bridge between the medical staff and the patient, the family. And that can be good. So there's a lot of bridge working and bridge building that we do. So that's why I picked it.
Comes and silver girl. Sail on by, your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine.
You're listening to 3TFM's Holy Half Hour, where we're interviewing the Reverend Judith Huggett, who's the lead chaplain at Crosshouse Hospital and a few hospitals in Ayrshire. So Judith, just tell us a wee bit about yourself.
Well,
where were you born and brought up?
I'm a Fifer by birth. I grew up in a very small village and a very happy family, very lovely childhood. And at 16, my father was moved with his work and I went all the way down to the south coast to Gosport. And went to sixth form college. So I was always slightly bemused that I went from fourth year, as we would call it in Scotland, into the lower sixth, which I thought was a bit strange, but never mind. So I have got Scottish O-grades and English A-levels. And from there, I went to Sheffield University. My first career path was the one that I chose, and I was going to be an archaeologist. And I studied ancient history, classical civilization, and classical archaeology, specialising in numismatics, Roman coins, and supply lines in the Roman army, which seems a very strange place to start when you think that I'm now a minister. And my first job from there was in the museum world, which is where I was trying to head to, but it wasn't quite in the field I wanted. And I went to Sandhurst, which is the Royal Military Academy of Sandhurst, and was the assistant curator in their museum. So from Roman history, I had to learn 200 years of modern military history. And it was great fun. And I learned a huge amount about photographs and costume and weaponry, anything from bayonets and swords and halberds and guns and revolvers and pistols and machine guns and you name it. So don't mess with me. I know how to use them.
It's all part of the rich tapestry of life, you see.
And it was from there that I began to have a very strong calling to go into the ministry. Something that I wasn't actually too keen on. I really thought I did not want to be doing that at all. But eventually I went.
Can you just explain on that? You felt called to the ministry when you felt a bit repelled by the thought.
Yes.
Can you explain a wee bit of that?
Well, I was doing the job I wanted to do and my career was slowly beginning to progress, and it was a very specific call to come into the ministry, and I didn't want to get up and preach every Sunday.
Specific is a specific call?
It was actually back to the Church of Scotland as well, and of course by now I'd lived 5-6 years in England and had been a member of the United Reformed Church. It was very specific to come home and to be a minister at home. And I can remember as...
I'm assuming you had a lot of church background before this.
Oh, yes. I've always gone to church. Went to church, went to Sunday school, was a Sunday school teacher, was a youth club leader, was a fellowship leader, was a young people's leader. All the usual things that you do.
So it was quite a natural progression and evolution into this
call. I didn't think
call,
so. No? I didn't think so. I was very quite happy doing what I was doing, I thought. So I made a bargain with God, which is never a good idea. I asked him basically to shut up if I went to selection school. Please stop nagging me, because that's what it felt like. It felt like I was being nagged. So I said, look, I'll go to selection school, but just please give it a rest. So he gave it a rest and I went to selection school. And I went on the basis that coming from England, being a member of the United Reformed Church, why would the Church of Scotland want me back? I don't know, but they took me back. And that was in the Easter.
How did you feel when you got the word?
I think actually by then I had sort of resigned myself to it in a strange way. So that was the Easter, the selection school, and in the October I started at Glasgow University on my Divinity degree. And I thoroughly enjoyed that, and I had an exchange year in America at Decatur, at Columbia Theological Seminary. Decatur is a small suburb of Atlanta. And it was there that I also encountered for the first time hospital work as a chaplain, doing what was so delightfully entitled their Ministry to Persons course. Very inclusive, you see. I found it scary and I found it interesting and I found it very challenging. And I thought, I kind of like that kind of ministry. But it was parish ministry to which I was called. So I came home and completed my probationary and was then ordained and inducted into Gore Bridge, which was my first parish, which is a small village 10 miles outside of Edinburgh.
And that's where we first met. We're both in Lothian Presbytery together.
That's right. We did indeed. You were near the coast than I, though. I had the hills and you had the sea.
Uh-huh. So you were in Gore Bridge for about 8.5 years?
That's right. That's right.
And then after that?
After that, well, during that time, I often teased my congregation as I was leaving, saying it was actually their fault that I went towards hospital ministry, because for 3 years in a row they won the sickest village in Midlothian. I'm not sure it's a title.
What do you have to do to be the sickest village?
We had the highest hospital admissions rate.
All right.
But it was a natural thing in one sense for a village like Gorebridge, which was ex-mining and rural. We had high levels of long-term chronic sick, certainly amongst the older population. And so often found themselves in hospital. So between having had my interest sparked while I was training and then doing a lot more while I was in Gorebridge, I decided that that was where I was being led. And I started looking for a hospital chaplaincy post, which at that time was a Church of Scotland appointment. They were the agents for the National Health Service to appoint chaplains. And I applied for and got the post at Cross House.
And you've been here for 14 years.
14 years.
Right, well, let's hear more about that in a minute. But you've picked another piece of music. Would you like to explain this next choice?
It's one of my favourite pieces of music. It's an English folk tune collected by Vaughan Williams and arranged into a piece called Five Variants on Dives and Lazarus, which is the original tune. But most of us will know it much better as the hymn tune Kingsfold, which is the hymn I heard the voice of Jesus say, come unto me and rest. And I love that hymn and I love the music with it. They're very powerful together.
Thank you.
So Judith, you kind of juggle two things. You're the Crosshouse Hospital chaplain, but you're also a church person, so you sometimes preach at weekends and things.
Occasionally, yes. I will preach more often than not if I'm going to preach in St Andrew's and St Marnock's Church in Kilmarnock, which is in fact my home church. But I also take a full part in presbytery. And at the moment I'm an interim moderator and I serve on one of the committees. So at the moment it's quite a busy life juggling all of them together.
In fact, you were the moderator of the presbytery.
I was, yes, a couple of years back, and I had a lovely time doing that, doing all sorts of different things,
yeah.
Uniting churches and inducting and ordaining ministers and so on.
Yeah, I'm curious about parish ministry as opposed to hospital chaplaincy. How have you found the differences?
I think with the church you have a family. You have a family that you get to know as in the church family, and you walk a specific journey with that family over the years. That's not quite so apparent in a hospital, where obviously we have a high turnover of patients. So in some ways, our staff are our family, but it is a very big and a very disparate family. So it doesn't have quite the same closeness or connectedness, I suppose. But I suppose you could see it in one sense as the difference between the GP and coming to hospital in medical terms. Your doctor knows your family, and then you come for specialist care and treatment to the hospital. And while you're in hospital, there is someone there who can be with you through it if you want them to be, in a spiritual or a religious sense. And that's our work, if you like. So we're often sort of very acute work. Things are either very good or very bad, tend not to be too much in the middle.
Mm-hmm. As a parish minister, I often suspect that you get a better conversation with people in a hospital bed, because they're more serious and more real, less trivia, you know.
Sometimes, but sometimes what's really important for people is for them to be normal when they're in hospital, because it's so easy in hospital to be institutionalised and just to become a patient and be a condition or a disease rather than Mary Smith or John. So it's good sometimes just to be allowed to be who you are. But in with that can be mixed the much deeper things about, is my life worthwhile? Have I had a good life? What's it all about? Why is it happening to me? But that can be mixed in with knitting patterns and football matches and, as I call them, the price of onions.
Is there a top 10 of what folk talk to you about, or what's up at the top of the list of folks' biggest concerns?
Their families. It's very rarely themselves, it's usually their family.
And they're more worried about what's happening at home than they are about themselves in the bed.
Yes, they are. Partly because we have complicated lives, and often it's not somebody's lying in bed, you know that somebody else is having to pick up the pieces. Somebody else will have to take the children to school, and we'll have to do the shopping, and we'll have to look after mum or walk the dog. And you know that it puts the whole little group of your particular family out of kilter. Or it's your group of friends. Not everybody is within a group, a family group these days. And how friends rally round and help, and you're aware very much of people helping you. And we're terrible as Scots. I never want to be a burden. And we're always very conscious of it. And I always say to people, you always give. Sometimes we have to learn to receive. And that's a harder lesson. And we can be bad for that in church as well. We're very good at giving, but we're not awfully good at receiving. So we don't always want to accept the lift to church on a Sunday morning, for instance, because I don't want to be a bother.
So what exactly does a hospital chaplain do?
All sorts of different things. I mean, obviously patients are fairly close to the top of our priority list and their needs and what happens to them. But so too are the needs and the cares and the concerns of our staff. Because we feel if we can look after our staff, then our staff can help look after their patients better. So we do an awful lot with staff. We are part of a team called Staff Care that helps to look after folk who work for the NHS. And we do that in different ways. We have a one-to-one service so that people can come and not exactly counselling, but have time apart where they can talk and share their troubles and their woes or what's happening with them with someone. We also run teaching courses for staff. So we teach courses on loss and bereavement. We teach on spiritual care. We teach on communication and on caring for self. And for stress awareness. And we also teach peer support, which is about learning how to use your own gifts as a human being to help watch and look out for each other and to watch for the signs when you know that somebody's not themselves. And instead of thinking, oh, they're a bad-tempered so-and-so today, to maybe say to them, what's up? So there's all sorts of different things we do there. And then we also work on some of the committees where we're a resource for the whole institution. And we take our part as well in some of the national things that go on. Obviously, chaplaincy has a national dimension to it. And we serve on different committees
and,
in that.
In your mixed career, you've had to bless a new sexual health clinic.
Yes. In fact, I think that's where the hospital radio you started out was in that Porter and Gatehouse. And it's now been turned into the Gatehouse Sexual Health Clinic.
Also, one of the saddest things must be the maternity when there's the deaths of babies.
It is. It is. It's very difficult in the maternity sometimes because people do have an image of only happy, healthy babies. And that's wonderful. And for many, many people, that is the reality of the maternity unit. But for some families, it's not the reality, and the reality is broken hearts and empty arms. And I work both with the parents and the staff and with SANS very closely to help with those occasions. I will take funerals for babies and preterm babies too. And I also help with SANS at Christmas time when we have an annual bauble service when we remember babies who have been lost. And in a lovely way, it's the one place at Christmas where you're allowed to be sad and cry, but you're also allowed to have hope. And you see that because there are parents there who still remember the baby they lost, but they have their children round about them as well. And it's a lovely way of the whole family being together at Christmas.
So can we sing your next piece of music? It's Labi Sifri, Something Inside So Strong.
Yes, I really like this, and I think it's partly what I think we do, is that there is a lot of strength inside every person, but sometimes we have to help each person find how to unlock it and find their own strength to help with what's going on.
So do Judith, I'm afraid our holy half hour's nearly expired, and we've been talking about hospital life, but it's not all gloom and doom, is it?
Oh, no, no, and that's something that you always have to remember. We have a lot of people who come in and out of the hospital doors, and almost all of them go home better than they came in, and that's a remarkable thing, isn't it? And I think there's a lot happening now in terms of public health and getting people to realise it's a partnership between the health service and themselves. We can do so much, but people can all do a great deal for themselves as well, and about changing lifestyles and diets and habits and things. And, you know, I'm no different from anyone else. I would say, you know, maybe slightly too much chocolate some days is not a good thing. But there is a partnership, and between the two of us, I think Ayrshire does remarkably well.
So anyway, I'd just like to thank you very much, Judith, for sharing these thoughts. I'm sorry the half hour's so short, but we appreciate you opening up to us and giving us an insight into your life and ministry. And I'm sure you'll see the worst in people and the best in people at the same time. That's the rich tapestry that life is.
It certainly is. Thank you very much for inviting me, Alec.
We wish you well, and we're going to finish with a piece of music which you've chosen. You've done me no favours with the name of the artist here. What nationality was it?
He's Norwegian, I think.
Norwegian. So it's Ola Giello, with apologies for pronunciation. And this is Ubi Caritas. So thanks again, and see you all next week.